It's all in your head. Nothing is real. You are not who you think you are. Be very afraid. Everyone is fucking with you. You might have shit your pants. Okay, I apologize for all the weird horse shit. It'll make sense later, maybe. Welcome to Gem Hunt, our family horror podcast where we fucking watch a goddamn movie with less than 5,000 votes on IMDb. We analyze that motherfucker and then we vote on whether it's a hidden horror gem or a piece of shit ass turd. That's what we do. That's what we've been done doing, and that's what we're gonna keep doing. My name is Cody, and it burns when I piss.
Aww. I'm Beth, and after you poop, I light matches with my mind.
I'm Buggy, and I'm not a puppet. I'm not a hand. I'm a real fucking person.
Yeah, boy.
Nice. That's a good one. Okay, so for the second episode in a row, I don't have much to report on other than to say that we're probably going to go check out Sinners this weekend, hopefully.
So excited about that movie.
Yeah, I heard that guy on WTF and he sounds real cool. This is a white person's take on Sinners. I heard him talking to Marc Maron and I like him.
Yeah.
I have a thing.
Okay.
New Twin Peaks theme bar opened up next to the Hollywood Theater.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You texted me that yesterday.
That's exciting. He sent it to me first.
Yeah. It's already too cool for us, I think.
Probably.
I'm sorry.
They got DJs.
Oh, DJs are cool now.
Yeah. I think so. Oh, okay. Pretty much all they have at Coachella these days.
All right. We're too cool for it.
Too cool.
I know the new David Cronenberg movie, The Shrouds, is coming out any minute now, so we're probably going to have to go see that at some point.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see. Heard mixed things about it. I was just thinking the other day about how many goddamn movies I have on my watch list, and I can't decide what I want to save for October or just start watching random shit. I don't know. Guys got anything else?
Yeah, they're making a new I Know What You Did Last Summer.
Oh.
And like all of the people that didn't die in the first
movie. So they're like going to be the parents.
They're like in it now.
Nice. We went to see that at Queer Horror and it was a blast.
I like thought it was like a new Scream movie until like halfway through and I was like, oh, wait, mm-hmm. Hold up. That guy has a hook on his hand. Never mind. And I saw Jennifer Love Hewitt and I went, oh, she's here.
Yeah.
J-Love.
She's I might watch
there.
It.
I kind of like her in like this weird way.
Yeah, she seems like she's doing the best that she's doing.
I like
doing.
Her face. Like, I like how like, it's kind of like, I don't. You guys don't know this like Dua Lipa meme, but do you guys know who Dua Lipa is?
We yeah. know who Dua Lipa is.
I don't know.
Is.
I don't know. Like, she hasn't done anything recently.
We're not
That's
in the
what
coffin.
I'm saying. I just mean like she hasn't done anything recently.
Sure.
But like this meme originated because during one of her concerts, she wasn't really dancing and someone commented, yes, girl, give us nothing. That's kind of what I think about. And I think of, sorry, Jennifer Love Hewitt. But
she has a heart-shaped face.
I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's an asset.
Oh, I heard a random thing today. Speaking of movies of that era, when they were filming Wild Things.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that movie.
Did you watch yeah. that? Yeah.
Everyone,
have you seen it?
Everyone
yeah.
has to.
So this was a Kevin Bacon quote. They were like filming next to like a swampy river or something and a real dead body floated by.
No.
What the fuck?
And like no. the cops had to go fish it out so they could keep filming.
So fucked up. For Wild Things 2 is crazy. Yeah. That was an omen.
Mm-hmm. I saw that in the theater. With like people I didn't know very well and it was very uncomfortable.
I bet. Yeah. But also gave us one of the best moments in cinema history, if you will.
I don't know. It's been a long
time. Two hotties in a pool.
Yeah. Might have to revisit
it. It's lesbionic.
Oh, right. I just want to say thank you to my trusty laptop that we've been recording with every episode since we started. This is probably its last episode because I bought a newfangled fast laptop with my tax money. So this old dude can go to the retirement home where it only has to Google things and check email.
Oh, that means I'll be using it.
I'm going to still use it. I'm just not going to use it for like intense things. All right. So tonight is the movie I selected last week, which we talked about briefly at the end of the episode, The Attic Expeditions, released in 2001. This was directed by Jeremy Kasten. This was his first official feature. written by Rogan Russell Marshall. That's a hell of a name.
That's a tongue twister.
Yeah. So the cast is kind of what attracted me to this, because there's a lot of interesting character actors in this. And I was like, even if this movie ain't good, at least there's some like scene stealers. So this is starring Andras Jones as Trevor Blackburn. He popped up in Nightmare on Elm Street 4, actually. Jeffrey Combs, the legendary Jeffrey Combs, is Dr. X.
Yes!
You know Jeffrey Combs, Reanimator, From Beyond, Castle Freak, The Frighteners. He's a horror legend. He is kind of the big star in this. Not the star, but like the big billing.
Mm-hmm.
We got Wendy Roby. Is it Roby or Robbie?
I think it's Roby.
Roby, it's spelled Roby. As Dr. Thalema. She's famous for playing Nadine in Twin Peaks.
Nadine.
I just love her voice, too. Yeah. She has like such an interesting, cool voice.
She was also in People Under the Stairs, so good horror resume there. Ted Raimi. Everybody knows Ted Raimi. He plays Dr. Coffey. He was in the Evil Dead films, Blood Rage, Intruder, Shocker, Candyman. He's all over the horror landscape. We got Seth Green as Douglas. Seth Green's an interesting guy. Everybody knows him from the 90s in the early 2000s. And Alice Cooper makes a cameo as Samuel Leventhal. Then we got Beth Bates as Faith, Shannon Hart Cleary as Amy, and some other people as well. The composer was David Reynolds. Cinematography was done by Greg Littlewood and Michael Negrin. Where can you watch this donkey dick sack liquor? Tubi, FlixFling, Midnight Pulp, Troma Now. That's interesting. We watched a Troma-adjacent movie for our last episode.
Yeah.
I don't even know if that movie is on Troma Now, but this one is. It's on IndiePix Films, which, that's an Amazon channel. FlixHouse Filmsy, Fossum TV, I never heard of that one.
Whoa.
Yeah, new stuff cropping up all the time. It's streaming for free on YouTube on Horror Central's YouTube channel. So that's an easy way to get it. Or you could rent it on Amazon, Fandango, Google Play. This movie is not well known, but it is easy to find, I'll say that. All right. What is this son of a bitch about? How do I begin describing this movie? Other than to say, this is one of them mind-bending, mind-fuck movies that fucks your brain with a big, confusing dick. However,
true.
I don't want to give the impression that the mind-fuckiness is necessarily a bad thing. You can make your own mind up about that. What I am going to try to do is give you a general sense of what this is about without getting into all the mental twists and turns you get throughout this thing. So, here we go. We're introduced to Trevor Blackburn in an early dreamy sequence where he awakens from a dream under a tree and has an idyllic romantic moment with his fiancée, Faith. This doesn't last long before Trevor is catapulted into a nightmare situation involving black magic rituals, possible botched brain surgery, other weird things, before waking up in a sanitarium under the supervision of Dr. Eck, played by Jeffrey Combs, as we noted earlier. Trevor learns that he has been committed to the sanitarium for murdering his fiancée and has been there for 4 years with no memory of what actually happened. We get a quick Alice Cooper cameo as his character Samuel Leventhal walks into the sanitarium after a brief escape.
I am a wet nurse, not a bellhop. I believe this is your patient.
Mr. Leventhal, what are you...
Fine, I admit it. I was trying to escape, but it's because I saw the taxi. I mean, I would have tried to escape even if I didn't see the taxi.
And he's alongside Ted Raimi's character, Dr. Coffey. Dr. Coffey is there to observe Dr. X's methods, which are a bit out there. It turns out Dr. Eck is kind of a psycho, drug addict, mad scientist. Developing, a new experimental treatment he's testing out on Trevor, specifically. Trevor is whisked away to a halfway house of sorts called the House of Love, where Wendy Roby's character Dr. Thalema is the caretaker or head medical professional or whatever. I don't know exactly what she is. She's some kind of doctor.
She is.
The house has some vibrant colors and honestly looks pretty cool. Trevor meets the other residents, including Seth Green as a paranoid man named Douglas. There's also Amy, who likes to fuck people and then call the cops on them or something like that.
I mean,
that
who does?
That is her shtick.
There's also a character named Ronald who speaks through a hand puppet, and Liz, who never stops typing on her typewriter. Trevor begins having bad dreams where he, and this is a big shocker, explores the attic.
You could even
say that he goes on expeditions to the attic. He discovers a box, which may or may not be his head.
I know.
Is it his head?
Yeah.
This is where things start to get confusing as Trevor attempts to determine what's really happening to him. Meanwhile, Dr. Eck is monitoring everything that's happening in the House of Love, and Dr. Coffey is becoming concerned that Dr. Eck is committing some serious medical malpractice with his experimental treatment. The bad dreams continue. We learn a bit more about the black magic ritual through Trevor's dream sequences, and we find out there's a book with a magic spell that Dr. Eck is trying to recover. People start dying. We begin to sense that everyone is in on this thing except for Trevor. There's almost a Truman Show type situation going on. There are plenty of tits and fucking interspersed into the chaos.
For sure.
Shaved bush.
And slow-mo. Yeah. Random slow-mo interjections.
Yep. And ultimately, everything goes to shit with some serious slasher vibes embedded in the mindfuckery. And by the end, you're probably going to be thoroughly bewildered. There's also a Chekhov's whiskey bottle at one point.
Oh, yeah. Keep Chekhov's Cutty Sark.
Yeah, keep your eye out for that.
Yeah.
You whiskey fiends.
Yeah. No, we're talking about we're Chekhov fiends.
Yeah.
We're into drama. Have you ever read anything that Chekhov wrote?
I don't even know who that is.
Never heard of him.
You fuckers.
Sounds like a
who
smart...
Who is that?
Some kind of smart
He's a,
guy.
Like,
is he like a like Russian author or something?
Absolutely, but you would love him. You would love him.
He's not like the master margarita fuck, is he?
I thought we were supposed to be anti-Russian now. You're telling me I'm supposed to be
say,
pro-Russia all
these
of
these are white Russians.
I
you know,
find
the, like the pre-revolutionary
Russian literature to be very interesting and culture to be
you
very
know
interesting.
Anton Chekhov.
Who is that? Give me a book.
Okay, I will.
I've been checking
no, just
off
say
a lot
one.
Lately.
He wrote a lot of short stories and plays, and they're okay. great.
No
and
idea.
They're and what?
I don't know who this is.
Anyway,
let's analyze this thing. Let's pick it apart. So this was a straight-to-video film that the production team began working on in 1995 or 96.
Oh, wow.
It took 4 years for them to complete after they initially ran out of money. The director, Jeremy Kasten, noted on the Blu-ray special features that they were trying to raise $85,000 to start the movie and had only raised $32,000 and just said, fuck it. Let's start rolling. So that kind of gives you a sense of what we're working with here, although it was shot on 35mm. And the production value is a lot better than you'd expect from that kind of situation.
Which, that's something I want to say. When you were going through the credits, the production design team.
Oh, yeah.
Laura Roberts, Cordelia Culver. I think Laura Roberts is the person we saw in that little extras thing. And she, like, made the set incredible just basically on a shoestring budget because they were all, like, college friends that were arty.
Yeah, it took
people.
Them months.
And the like, so that really, that meant something. It did something for the movie.
For sure.
So yeah.
Yeah.
Just a side note.
Okay, I want to start the analysis with a quick question. Why were there so many mindfuck, mind-bending movies in the late 90s and early 2000s? Is this something you all have clocked? Because I started making a list and it's kind of nuts. There was just like a shit ton of films that explored this idea of what's real, what's not, paranoia, themes along those lines.
I have a theory.
Yeah, is there any like
you're
social
You're probably
links?
Too young. You might have a theory too. My theory is it was one of those, as someone who was coming of age in that era, it was the like 60s, 70s revival, sort of. Everyone was doing the drugs, wearing the pants, you know.
The pants?
The bell bottoms, whatever.
They're wearing bell bottoms. Okay.
Yeah, people were wearing people were going to see Dead and Company or whatever.
They're still doing that.
Well, they are.
I just wonder too if there were any like significant like cultural moments or like events that could have like could be added to that. Like
technology was starting to ramp up, which was like confusing people.
Desert Storm, like it's a return to like a hippie thing because, and this might be like totally off base and it has nothing to do with that, but it's also that like 20 to 30 year cycle, I think.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you wear your mom's clothes, who wore her mom's clothes, who, you know, because it's like just about
keeps happening.
That's my guess.
I would just wonder if like there's, if either there was some like significant like event that like aided in that, like if there was like a cultural thing that made people like make movies that are questioning reality and like the state of how things are.
Or the ability to make the movie look like it could also be like technological advance, like you're saying technology, but technology to make surreal stuff look believable.
Yeah. Or maybe it's just like someone did it first and it really worked out.
What movie? We were talking about that on one other movie. It's like somebody just did it and then everyone else
and,
is like, oh,
right. And
it.
Everyone picked up on it maybe too. It could just be as simple as that. It's like this was working at the time and this was what people liked.
These guys like John Waters, by the way.
I love that.
Who doesn't? One of them was in, what movie?
I don't know.
One of the guys
Hairspray?
Yeah, one of them was in Hairspray. One of the guys who made this movie, like.
I love that.
I think it was like the play version of it, not the movie, maybe.
It looked like the movie to me, but maybe not.
I don't know. Yeah, we can confirm that. But here's just a quick list of some of the movies I was talking about that came out in this era. Identity, Fight Club, 12 Monkeys, Memento, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, Donnie Darko, Mulholland Drive, The Truman Show, Shutter Island, Being John Malkovich, Open Your Eyes, which ultimately became the American version, Vanilla Sky.
Or Vanilla Sky,
Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
And I guess you could add this movie to the list since it came out in 2001 and is definitely a mind fuck.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't necessarily want to compare this to any of those films I just listed, but I think you can see some elements from those other films in The Attic Expedition. So I thought it was an interesting conversation starter.
Maybe you were just like allowed. Okay, so yeah, I was trying to think who was like you were allowed to get trippy again. Like there was a weird 80s freeze on that when Reagan was president, right? And then people were like, come out of the closet is like getting trippy. I don't know.
Cause it is kind of a strange coincidence that there are so many movies that are exploring that specific idea.
Yeah.
Like of like questioning reality and like sort of an unreliable narrator also at play.
Unreliable narrator is a big part of this and a big part of that's an interesting, like, interesting.
Yeah. I didn't even have that term clocked in my notes, but that's a good way to
put
it.
You and clocked today.
He's
love
clocking
this.
And clocking and clocking and he had to quit talking because his beeper kept
squawking.
Squawking. Thank you.
Rappers here today on the couch.
On the couch.
Rappers on the couch today.
So what did y'all think about the way this film unfolds as a kind of perplexing mental puzzle of sorts? And does this remind you of any of those other mind-fucky movies I listed specifically? I was kind of thinking of a few in my head, but I want to hear what you think about that.
I mean, I don't think it reminded me of like any specific movie based off of like its plot. It just, it was very early 2000s in like that classic way.
Mm-hmm.
I think I kind of like underestimated the film too, because I was watching this with my friend, other Cody, and we were watching it together and we were kind of like,
eating.
Is this a joke or is this like for real?
You were watching also on your phone.
We were, but
which is not like a
not
proper,
the best viewing experience, but I feel like as it unfolded, I was like, oh, okay, I like this a little bit more and I like where this is going, but I didn't really like clock it being the same as any like other particular movie. Clocking. It just had that like same this is just in the vernacular today.
Now clocking is gonna be our new thing.
We're just clock it. We should make that like our thing. We say at the end, we just go clock it.
It's clock day here.
We have a lot of fucking clocks today, but no, it didn't remind me of anything in particular, just the style.
Dream Warriors. Yeah. Okay, that, and then
it's like Dream Warriors for adults.
12 Monkeys and The Truman Show, which you already said. Those are the ones which you listed in your thing, and all of those movies came out before this
I haven't seen.
Those were the two.
Oh, buddy.
Those were the two specifically that I kind of was thinking of Well, obviously, like, you know, he gets to his group home, he's sitting with all the people, and it's all kind of like mindfucky, and they're meeting each other and talking about their paranoia. And I was immediately like, oh yeah, Dream Warriors. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think 12 Monkeys and Truman Show were the two specifically that I feel like we were talking about as we were watching it.
It's 12 Monkeys.
Oh, I, it's, you another, know, like, early 2000s. I had not watched it because I missed it. It came out in 95. And so that was, you know, if anyone here knows me, that was a rough period in my life. Yeah, I did not see it. I did not see it. So I, Cody and I watched it recently, and I, it's, yeah, one of those. Yeah, we watched it
on VHS on a, whoa, little TV at the Southwestern.
Oh, we watched it at the Southwestern.
Southwestern.
Cut it. You, it's like Bruce Willis, Brad Pitt, mental institution thing. Big deal. Like, not the greatest movie ever, but it has, like, its DNA is in a lot of shit.
Is it like the one with the weird monkey with the tambourines on his hands, or is that the different one?
No, the 12 Monkeys is like the name of like a weird revolutionary group.
Anyway, we went off on a thing, but yeah, like, that's something that it's not the greatest movie ever, but it has like some real foundational kind of stuff that you should probably watch it just for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know,
for sure.
It's like watching The Wizard of Oz. Like, you know, we've gone so far past it, but it's important.
Yeah. It inspired a lot of
things. And it's, what's his face? Who made it?
Jimmy John
made it.
Jimmy John is crazy.
Yeah. Jimmy John made it.
Terry Gilliam.
Yeah, Terry Gilliam. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
But in terms of the way that this movie unfolds with the mind fuckiness, what was your thoughts on it? Because I had some thoughts as it was going on, some initial thoughts and then some thoughts later. Did it work? Did it not work for you?
You should lead because I feel like we've been talking a lot. So yeah, what are your initial and your unfold? Your unfolding?
Yeah, I guess like from the beginning, I could sense that it was going to like go in a lot of directions and kind of put you in this mind space where you don't know what's going on and the lead character doesn't know what's going on, which was very cool in the beginning. It like actually kind of works for quite a while, but you could just kind of sense that it's going to have too many strands right. that are going to like unravel. And by 2/3 of the way through, you're going to be having a hard time keeping track of everything that's happening.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. You need a really deft hand to pull that off.
Yeah. And they did a pretty good job, but it did get a little loosey-goosey and a little wild in the second half. So that's kind of my initial thought.
Agreed, although she was saying she kind of got all of it, which we didn't.
Well, like, to be fair, I had help just because, like, while I was watching it, I, like, I had looked it up before to, like,
right, so you had like a little bit of like a cheat sheet.
Well, not exactly like at first. I was just looking it up to like, this is so stupid, but to click on Tubi through that because I was lazy. I don't know why I did it that way, but I did see like the plot synopsis and I was like, oh, okay.
So you read, okay, got
so it. I like what it says on like Google.
It gives which you. I so wouldn't don't do that, everybody out
I
there.
I wouldn't, honestly, because it, well, it clarifies some things and it is helpful. It does kind of like, you will find that out on your own. Like, whatever it said, like, you will know at a certain point in the movie.
Totally. Right. Well, here's an interesting note. Kind of related, kind of not, but just kind of thinking about the inspiration that went into this. Because, like, your gut instinct might, like, immediately go to some of those movies on that list we just talked about. But in the Blu-ray special features, Jeremy Kasdan talked about some of his inspirations, which were like Suspiria,
nice,
Giallos, the films of Jean Rollin, which we just talked about recently.
Back to the Bush.
Yeah. And then he also talked about the films of Coffin Joe, which we talked about a while back.
Oh, there he go. That's Coffin Joe.
Yeah, that's Bark and Bob. So in terms of Coffin Joe, Jeremy Kasdan notes that one of the things he liked about it is that that guy made a bunch of weird movies when it was a hustle, which I think is one of the big takeaways from this, is that they were really hustling to make this.
Yes, I want to talk about this. Are you at the point where we're going to talk about this?
We can if you want. Yeah, we can go anywhere you want.
So we were watching the credits for this movie and we saw that a production assistant on this movie was none other than one Tim Heidecker.
Tim Heidecker from Tim and Eric?
Yeah. Yes. And then in the special features we watched, absolutely same Tim. First time working on a movie. Definitely yeah, first on screen.
He was an intern.
Screen.
He was like intern. In college mm-hmm. in a film program. A went to LA as an intern, and this is like the first gig he got as a production
That's
assistant.
So weird.
But he was on screen for a moment driving a car with a mask on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so he's in the movie.
Because he's like so a. Funny. Yeah, but. And yeah, I don't know how much we want to get into the like. I don't want to fuck up your order of things.
That's okay.
But yeah, the de-evolution of like the budget and then like needing to do things so small and so like unpaid. But yes, Tim Heidecker.
Yeah.
It's like very random, but I love
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah. No, it was.
I love that guy just pops up randomly.
He does.
Yeah.
All right. So on top of this being a mind fuck movie, it's also very much a mad scientist movie.
Yeah.
Which I think is pretty fun. I'm not sure we really covered mad scientists on this podcast before, unless you count Mad Monster Party.
Oh, that's a mad true. Scientist.
That
yeah.
is mad scientist. But here's kind of like a list of films to think about in terms of mad scientist horror. So we have the prototype Frankenstein, obviously, and other classics like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde and The mm-hmm. Invisible Man, shit like that. And then we got Jeffrey Combs again
yeah.
in Reanimator, maybe one of the best mad scientists in film history. And Jeffrey Combs again in From Beyond,
mm-hmm.
Ultimate Mad Scientist, which is, that might be my pro wrestling name.
He's 3 for 3.
Ultimate Mad Scientist.
I like that.
UMS. Ums.
You could throw like acid at people in crowds exactly. and shit.
Obviously, we can't. Forget Jeff Goldblum as Seth Brundle in The Fly.
The Fly.
The Brundle Fly. If you haven't seen that for a while or if you've never seen it, go watch The Fly. It's amazing.
It's really gross.
It's so fun.
It's so
like,
good, though.
It's gross. It's scary. It's funny. Mm-hmm. I forgot how funny it was.
And
it's
Gina
great.
Davis
it's just perfect.
Isn't it?
Gina Davis is such a... We talked about this before when we watched it, but... She's a fucking young babe, which just like there was something wrong with me where I thought she was an old lady.
There's something about that lady, man.
She's special.
It's like her and Sigourney Weaver. It's like, what's
special.
Going on with you guys?
Yeah.
Obviously, there's a mad scientist in Beyond the Black Rainbow.
Oh, yeah. Have
and,
you seen that?
No. Oh, and Human Centipede.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously, anything Cronenberg generally has a hint of mad scientist to it. But I want to give a shout out to a little film, old film called Strange Behavior, a.k.a. Dead Kids. We watched it for October list in like 2022 or something. And I kind of want to rewatch it. It could even be maybe a Jim Hunt movie at some point. It's a fun one. Here's a quick, interesting little Reddit post from a user named The Man from Ozone. So username checks out. The archetypal mad scientist itself can be read as an expression of the trope, science has gone too far, or playing God, a simultaneous fear and wonder of scientific advancement and meddling with affairs beyond what mankind should. Despite this, they are rarely painted as evil characters. Often at worst questionable or ambivalent, and importantly, often tortured or suffering, which is kind of interesting because I feel like Jeffrey Combs in this movie is pretty evil.
Yeah, listening to that description, I just think, oh, this is mad scientists were like people with autism before we understood autism.
Hmm. Yeah.
I think it's a hot take.
Hot take.
Yeah.
I mean, I think maybe not that they're not evil, but I truly believe like with the mad scientist trope for the most part, and even with whatever his name is in this movie, like I truly
Eck.
Believe they
Dr.
always Eck. Do like think they're doing the right thing.
Right.
Or
right.
they think yeah. whatever they're doing is for the greater good. And I want to point out
I don't know if that's true in this movie, though. He wanted something.
He did also mention the
fixing
reason
mental
for
illness,
what
yeah.
that, yeah, for what that want was, mm-hmm. was to fix mental illness as a whole. But I wouldn't trust his narrative because
true.
He was doing some weird shit and rolling up joints. So I don't really
and
know.
And injecting drugs.
Was it heroin
yeah.
or what?
No,
I don't even
well,
know.
Probably
yes.
morphine or something.
Yeah.
Who knows? He said he had a prescription.
Okay.
Yeah. What do you think of Jeffrey Combs' performance in this?
Great.
Yeah.
I agree.
Subdued, great, you know, acting.
He's a pro.
Yeah. He is also just like another like very satisfying voice to like listen to. Like it's just
seems like he's just kind of a nice dude too.
Yeah, he was really cool on the little like Zoom call interview thing.
Yeah, that's yeah.
He He was really excited about this movie, which I thought was cool. One of my favorite quotes from Dr. Eck is, "The human mind isn't equipped to fully understand the human mind."
Oh, yeah.
Which I think is a good, kind of a good summary of this movie in some ways.
The human mind isn't fully equipped to understand the human mind, but it is, unfortunately, all that any of us have.
Yeah, it's a trunk in the attic and a trunk in the attic and a trunk in the attic.
True. Speaking of mad scientists, RFK Jr. Tapped a man named David Geyer to serve as his official autism expert. Also,
tell me more, tell me more.
Brett, like, didn't I don't, have even, a don't brain. Even get started on that. That yeah. shit made me so fucking mad.
He picked this guy even though he has no medical degree and at one point ran experiments where he injected autistic children with a puberty-blocking drug. And because he didn't have a medical license, he was fined $10,000 by the state of Maryland for doing this. So.
Did you just say Maryland?
Maryland.
Are you guys in cahoots?
What is a Maryland?
Yeah, exactly.
Maryland.
All right.
I don't know.
I love you both, but I can't.
He had a worm in his brain, okay? Maybe we should ask him about what is okay to eat, because that man is eating like dead bear meat and
survived.
Beyond
the worm in his brain, like he is like... Nepo baby is not strong enough a term, because lots of Nepo babies are really nice people or good actors. And, you know, you've just gone in the family business. He is a fucking, he is a worm. He's a fucking parasite.
Yep. He's just
don't
crazy.
Get me like going, but
half of his brain is gone from the
children
worm.
Have died of fucking measles this year.
Well, also he's just
and adults not like children aren't more important than adults. Adults serious. Have died of measles.
Not to get serious, but he's also like saying like autistic people can't have universal normal experiences or contribute to society, which is not true.
Everyone in this room is autistic.
Well, that's, where I'm are not. Your scientists going to go if you get rid of all the autistic people?
I don't know.
I'm too dumb to be autistic.
You are the smartest person in this room, and not you are true. A multi, like you can play multiple instruments, and sometimes you're weird,
two,
and therefore
I
you're
can
autistic.
Play two skin flutes
must
at
be.
The same time.
If you're talented, you are. That's really the truth.
Exactly. He's anyways, a Rain Man, and yes, I heard your fucking skin flutes. I hear your skin flutes. All night and all day.
Long story short, there are real mad scientists out there running the government.
Yes. Oh, hell yeah. Those right. are the good ones.
Let's talk about women with red hair and them as villains.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, because, I love getting into the red hair trope. Okay. Or the red hair, like whatever.
Yeah, there's a lot of interesting tropes to talk about in this movie. So Trevor's fiance, Faith, mm-hmm. is kind of a villain of sorts in this film. Obviously, we noted that there's some like involvement with like witchcraft or black magic, something like that. And one important detail about Faith is she has very vivid red hair. Mm-hmm. And so we started pondering, why do villains, especially women, often have red hair? Apparently, this is a tendency that goes way back. I know you have some notes, but...
Oh my gosh, I have so many notes about this because it's something I think about all the time.
There are traitorous biblical figures like Eve and Judas Iscariot who often appear in paintings with red hair. Mm-hmm. Historically, red hair is a mark of a witch and favored by Satan. And I guess that's why Satan doesn't like me as much as I like him because I don't have red hair.
Got it.
Yeah. What do you guys think about broads with red hair? Are they evil?
I read that Cleopatra was a redhead.
That's impossible.
No, it's not. 2-6% of European descent have red hair. I don't know. There's like conventions and festivals around the world about red hair. But yeah, no, the like stereotypes, there's stuff in Gulliver's Travels. The redhead people are like super into fucking. That's a thing. They're like, I'm going to try and say this word right. It's one of like pretty good at words, but libidinous.
Oh, yeah. I've heard that
libidinous.
Word.
Libidinous.
Okay. You know what that means?
No.
Like libido. Libido. Oh, okay. Libidinous.
I mean, that kind of makes sense too, because also like redhead is kind of like
fire.
Synonymous with, I can't even say that word right, like with being a trickster too. Like when you think about like
Thor.
Or like, but also like a leprechaun.
Yeah, yeah. Leprechauns.
Or Chucky.
Thor, yeah. Chucky.
But like, yeah, there are like weird, like, you know, like mystical things that also have red hair that are considered like, not always evil, but like tricksters. Like people who enjoy like pulling pranks and stuff like that. There's also weird shit about people with red hair now. People say like they're, have you ever heard like incest? Like people always joke that redhead people like have that in their family because it's a recessive gene.
I don't know. It is a recessive gene.
Well, it's not true. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying
it is a recessive gene. But like going on the anti-Semitism thing, like going on about that, it's not only, you know, like Judas, it's also like, in Shakespeare and Dickens, there are characters that are like villains that are Jews that have red hair, and that's like the marker that they're Jews. I don't know. It's fire.
Because fire, red hair. Well, and
that's
hell.
Yeah. That's another thing is that it's you know, the four humors. It's I've that one. Sanguine. It's blood. It's like you're like full of light, but that also means you're like fiery. You're evil. You're murky. You're whatever. Anyway, I am all naturally sort of a redhead with green eyes, which is something else I read about.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's interesting to think about, but redhead, like having red hair, especially in like stories and in media, is like sort of, it's like trickster. Not always like malicious though. I just feel like it's kind of like treated unseriously.
But it's also, I think there's a difference in genders too, like where women are sexy and men are like kind of cucks. But
they're like the goofy ones, kind of.
Yeah,
the men.
Or weak or something.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah.
They're like spineless.
Especially in like media.
Yeah.
Yeah, like redhead men are spineless and redhead women are like fucking everybody.
Sexy and fiery. They have
And not faithful or something.
Really? Mm. That's something else too?
I think so.
Well, I guess it's Eve maybe. Maybe I was doing Eve.
It's just so interesting.
Yeah. You know, the Faith character is interesting because she's pretty critical to the storyline. But unfortunately, I have to say that the actor who played Faith was one of the maybe weak links in this film.
Who also paid to get it made.
Yeah, so that's true.
Paid to get it made.
And she was fine. But the interesting thing, you know, the character actors, I'm going to get into this later, but the character actors were like amazing. And the kind of like lead actors were, especially like the actor that played Trevor was a bit flat. But,
this is budget, which also the actor that played Trevor, I was looking at
Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah. But his IMDb page said he splits his time between Los Angeles and Olympia.
That's
and I was like, is there another Olympia?
I don't know.
I don't think so. I think it's W.A.
Well, what's he doing school. There?
Drinking Olympia. At the reef?
And everyone's the same.
Okay, I wanted
we
to
live
like
the same.
Sorry.
I wanted to highlight a couple of things from the special features we watched because it was pretty fun, actually. I kind of liked watching those. And when we have time to watch Blu-ray special features, they can be pretty informative. So one interesting point from the Blu-ray is that everyone involved, including the established actors, all emphasized that they really believed in this project, which I thought was cool. And they were willing to keep doing the work, even though they weren't maybe necessarily getting paid
at all.
Some of the actors and crew even lived in the house.
Yeah, they
love.
Lived in the house.
Yeah, while they were working on it. And they were just basically, a lot of them were a bunch of buddies from college that were just fun dorks. And I thought that was great. You know, it made me sort of appreciate the film a little bit more hearing them talk about it because it wasn't just like a thing that came out of nowhere with a bunch of random people. It was like it started with like a core of like friends that wanted to make this.
They were like in a comedy troupe in college.
Yeah.
Yeah. And all the people that worked for them just wanted to be in the movie and stay in the movie. Yeah, and they slept in the house. I don't know. I thought that was cool, too. It made me like it more.
Yeah. And then, you know, obviously we noted the budget issues. They did a bunch of work on this thing before they ran out of money, and then they shut down production. And the scenes with Jeffrey Combs weren't actually shot for like 2 or 3 years later.
And he came back.
Yeah, he came back to do it when they finally got the money to get up and rolling again. But like, yeah, there was this huge multi-year gap. Where they just stopped production and then finally brought Jeffrey Combs back to do his scenes for the film.
Which brings me back to, you know, last time we were talking about I Need You Dead and like those three, you know, time, money.
Vision, maybe?
Vision, we whatever still the third. What the I know, third we need to is. Confirm that. But whatever, it was just somebody's opinion. They took their time. And also, I'm not still shit-talking that movie because there was some stuff about it I really liked a lot. But it's like you can feel in this movie that the people that made it were just like fun people. And so people wanted to work for them. Mm-hmm. You know, they gave them the 4 years it took because they were just like nice guys who were like, can you come back? And like, and there's so much to that versus going out and saying, I'm going to make the best movie that ever got made and I am talking shit and I'm done right now.
We voted that as a turd, didn't we? Or no,
because quite. I did a half because I think there were some things about it.
Did we do down?
I don't even remember what you guys did down. I did half. I halved it.
I think I did too.
I sliced that in half, that turd. No, but I just think I'm just saying there's something really to like any movie, any business you enter, you can tell like if the people there are happy to be there.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think that's 100% true. And I think that kind of comes across in this film, and especially when you hear people talk about it that worked on it.
Yep.
I wanted to talk about some reviews and some things I learned just from like looking at reviews and opinions on this film, because this movie received some really mixed reviews, with some people really enjoying the atmosphere and the mind-bending storyline and the performances from the supporting cast, where others were completely turned off by that like confusing mindfuck shit and felt that the flat acting of lead actor Andras Jones wasn't like good enough. I even saw one review that stated that the scenes with Jeffrey Combs and Ted Raimi felt tacked on and just seemed to be there as exposition to kind of explain what was happening in the movie. Mm-hmm. So some people thought this was completely shit, and some people loved how confusing and mind-bending it was. Mm-hmm. So it really was a bit polarizing. And then I saw this review from Variety that said, this movie is about as appealing as a tour of someone else's basement in the dark.
Oh, their attic, though.
The Attic Expeditions is an overly ambitious slice of Grand Guignol.
Oh,
that is none too grand in conception or execution. So pretty harsh review, but I picked up on that term Grand Guignol, and I was like, what does that mean? That sounds interesting. And so the Grand Guignol is a small Paris theater that opened in an old chapel in like the late 1800s that specialized in grotesquely convincing horror stories, often based on real life examples of sickening violence. They used a lot of gore effects and sex to shock audiences.
Ooh, love.
And it was more focused on serial killers, escaped lunatics, and revenge attacks. And that was a little quote from a BBC article talking about Grand Guignol. And I kind of started thinking about that in terms of this movie. And I was like, is that an appropriate term or like reference point for this? I don't know.
I don't think so.
I don't either. I don't get the like, I don't know where they pulled that out of their ass.
Wait,
from.
What like time period was that from?
Yeah, maybe it was like
the late 1800s.
The late 1800s.
Yeah.
So maybe at that point.
But they were
point,
one of the first like theater movements to start focusing on like real life horror.
Oh, okay.
It was really focused on the horror, but it was like real shit, like serial killers and stuff.
I mean, yeah, that just seems kind of like also they're flexing random that they know about something like that, because it's such like a random reference that honestly has genuinely nothing to do with what's happening in this. Like,
yeah, I wanted to point that out just because, one, I thought the concept of Grand Guignol was an interesting thing I never heard of.
What's the other one with the old ladies?
Oh, Grand Dame Guignol.
Yeah, that's so like old woman.
Yeah, like
horror.
Like fancy like leading ladies that end up being hags, scary
hags.
Yeah,
hag. It's like hagsploitation.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
yeah. Grand Dame. Yeah.
I don't know that. Also, I think what that's insinuating too is like this level of pretentiousness, which I don't think is included in this movie.
I feel like this movie
is anything but pretentious or like full of itself.
Funny thing about this is that like it feels like a movie that should be pretentious, but
for
some reason it's not. It is kind of a horror comedy, which is interesting. Like the comedy definitely comes through. It doesn't take itself too seriously, even though it's a high-minded concept.
Trevor, you gotta get me out of here. I don't know what's happening to me. I can't tell you who I am because I can't remember a goddamn thing. My mind's all fucked up in this goddamn puppet head, but I swear to you, as God is my witness, I am not this guy's hand. I'm real. I'm alive. Help me.
I can't take
anymore. Anyways, I think that's a good pivot to our thoughts and feelings. Who wants the thoughts and feelings first?
My mom's pointing at me. I don't know. I kind of have like mixed feelings and thoughts. I don't like that comment honestly irritated me because there is one thing I do appreciate about this film, and that it is like leaning into like the ridiculousness of it, which I always appreciate in a movie, honestly, like especially when we're dealing with things like this and like the overall aesthetic. I appreciate like movies that are early 2000s that are kind of, you know, making fun of themselves or being like realistic versus like shitty quality slow-mo movies that are like meant to be scary.
Mm-hmm.
Like 13 Ghosts. I don't know. That comes to mind where like I feel like that movie is trying to be serious, but maybe I'm wrong, honestly. Like maybe I like got the whole idea wrong.
Yeah.
But like that type of movie from the 2000s where it's like, this is a scary movie, and then it's like the stupidest shit ever. So I kind of like appreciated that. I liked the set design a lot. I get that there's like Italian inspiration because there was a lot of stained glass, especially at the beginning, like mm-hmm. in that house. And like overall, I kind of was impressed at like where the plot went. I like didn't expect that. I think even with like knowing what was happening, I was still kind of like, what actually is happening though? I'm like, I'm still not sure exactly. Even like reading the synopsis like on Wikipedia, I was still like, I think I kind of get it, but the ending confused me for sure. So yeah, I have like mixed feelings in that I like the people, like the production. They seem like really cool. I thought some of the elements of the movie were cool, but I don't know.
Yeah.
Same page. Like the way the house looked was kind of like Pee-wee's Playhouse-ish, mm-hmm. like all this cool paint and windows and I am not that stupid, and I got confused about what was happening, and that's part of it. Like, it's psychedelic or whatever, you know, but that's also, you can watch a psychedelic movie that is well done and like know what's happening, you know?
Yeah.
You know, the acting was definitely varied in terms of competence and
true
delivery. It was, I don't know. I thought it was fun. I had a good time watching it. I didn't always know it was happening. It was fun to look at. And yeah, that's where I land on that.
If I had seen this in 2001 when I was like 19 and stoned as shit,
you would love
it. I bet it would have blown my mind.
I probably
would be on a crazy nostalgia trip about this movie. Yes. But since I didn't, and I had to watch it through my jaded, cynical, overly mm-hmm. critical old man eyes, I think I'd have to say that I do agree with all of you guys and everyone that said that they were into the atmosphere of the film, and definitely the performances from the supporting cast. You know, I think we didn't talk a lot about Seth Green. Seth Green was really good in this movie.
He had a monologue
at one point that was
long
just
as shit.
Fantastic. And like, the way that they shot it, they were just following him around this room while he was doing the monologue. It was pretty impressive. One long shot.
I liked it. Yeah. And I liked that his like reason, like what his reason for being in the like sanitarium was. Do you guys remember?
Oh, yeah. He like cut his own balls off.
With a pair knife. Yeah. That's what he did, like specifically.
Yeah.
Well, that's what he says.
He says he cut his own balls off with the pair knife.
You're a stand-up guy, Trevor. You really are. But you still don't know why I'm in here.
Oh, sure I do.
You're working for them. You're the guy I'm supposed to trust enough to confide in.
No, Trevor, I cut my testicles off with a paring knife when they kicked me out of the Pink Floyd.
But no spoilers. Obviously, the production design, as you guys noted, was really great. Just like a bunch of scrappy young people not getting
just
paid to like paint an entire house and do that was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
But like I noted earlier, I sensed early in the film that the complexity and the mind-bendiness of this was bound to fall apart at some point.
Yeah.
And I think I have to admit that it pretty much did.
Yeah.
So I think if you were dialed into this movie and you really wanted to figure out what was going on, you might be a little bit disappointed.
Yeah, good luck.
Mm-hmm. But if you were just in it for the vibes, I don't know, if you were just like stoned and just writing this thing for vibes only, that might work also.
I think it is a stoned movie.
Yeah.
Like I think like it makes sense to a stoned person's brain for sure.
Yeah. But ultimately, I feel like no matter what, this is exactly the kind of movie that I like for Gem Hunt, where it's just like, what is this?
Yeah.
Like, why did I never see this when it came out?
Right. Know? Never heard of it.
Why did I never hear of it? There's all these people in it that I know and like. So I thought that was fun. Those are my thoughts. Do you want to do a vote? Oh, okay. Wait, we got to do an obscurity rating.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So on IMDb, this son of a bitch has 1,971 votes.
Not a lot.
Mm-hmm. IMDb critics, 25. There's one Rotten Tomato review. Wow. And obviously, we noted that the availability in streaming is quite a lot. There's about 12 places that you can watch it, plus the DVD and the special Severn Blu-ray release that they did for the anniversary. Mm-hmm. So all in all, this is a 5.5 on our little metric scale. So just above average. So a little bit unheard of, not the most obscure movie ever just because it's so available, but I think a lot of people haven't seen it. Okay, let's do the thing that we do.
Oh, I'm closing my eyes. Oh,
I'm not going to say anything about pee or poop.
I'm pooping and peeing.
Yeah. I'm going to do my countdown, and then we're going to thumbs up or thumbs down. Everyone's scared as shit.
I'm sweating.
3, 2, 1. Oh,
hey!
Okay, interesting.
All right, I'm happy about that.
Nice.
All right, so here's the rundown. We have 2 thumbs down, 1 thumbs up. I was a thumbs down.
I was a thumbs down as well.
I was a thumbs up, just because good effort, kids.
Yeah.
I agree, and I'm glad you put your thumb up, because I feel like this is a great movie to compare the last one
That's
to.
That's what we were talking about.
Like what you guys were saying, because what I like about this movie as opposed to the other one is I like the like vibe of these people and like the thing they were trying to pull off, and I like the idea.
Again, you fail, you fall on your face, you hope for a bigger, but it's not all about budget.
So. Yeah. And I think they did an amazing job with such a like bad budget. Like
people wanted to work.
Cool.
They wanted to work on it because they liked each other.
Yeah. So that's why like it's a thumbs down for me, because I don't really think I'm going to like think about
Tell
this movie ever
that,
again.
Yeah.
I'm going to probably think about it, but and I liked it. I had a fun time with it,
me
but
too.
I'm not going to like, I can't say this is like, oh, you guys have to watch this.
Yeah,
this is
yeah,
like
exactly.
This is one of those movies you've never heard of, and I can't believe you've never heard of it.
Yeah.
So
no.
That was the thing. And like part of the big part of it was like how sort of complex it got without, you know, really wrapping it up in a super tight way,
mm-hmm.
which when you're going that hard into the like mind bendy stuff, you need to stick the landing.
Yeah.
So that was kind of like the big element of it for me that I wouldn't classify it as a gem, but definitely not a turd. And I had fun watching it.
Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'm glad we're on the same page, guys.
Yeah. All right.
Always.
You know what time it is now?
Dun, 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 dun.
Special time!
Yay! Special time!
All right. For special time this evening, I want to talk about a funny little horror subgenre that I feel flies under the radar sometimes. Scarecrow horror. I know scarecrows are primarily an autumn and Halloween season type of thing, but it is spring. People are planting things. So I feel like that's enough of a nexus to talk about it. You got to get your scarecrow up while you're planting your shit, your corn and whatnot.
Should I do that?
I don't know. Maybe. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have one in the garage, kind of.
Why do they work?
I don't know.
That's my
it doesn't
question.
Matter. I can talk about whatever I want. My
That's
special
right.
Time.
Special time.
Yeah. But mostly I kind of wanted to endorse a handful of films from the subgenre that I think are worth a watch. So just to start out, here are a few facts about scarecrows. Historically, the concept of scarecrows has been around for as long as people have been growing shit in the ground. Ancient Egyptians would hide and then jump out and scare the birds into nets that were held up by wooden frames. Indigenous tribes of the Americas would sit on platforms and just yell at the birds. And Greek and Roman farmers placed statues of the god Priapus, the god of horticulture and fertility, in their fields to bless the harvest. And the scarecrows we know date back to medieval times in Britain and Western Europe. So here's an interesting quote from C.T. Ward, who's the Frederick County Master Gardener. This is from an article in the University of Maryland Gardening newspaper or something. As far back as 1719, scarecrows have haunted the media. In the classic Robinson Crusoe, Caruso looks back on the days of his scarecrows with fondness because birds never visited his land. This is thought to be the beginning of the scarecrow's popularity because it may be the first time the term scarecrow was used in the English language. So that's an interesting fact. But we're not here to talk about old-timey bullshit. I want to talk about scarecrow horror films.
Scarecrow Video.
Yeah, Scarecrow Video also is a good video store. Go there and rent a video. So the first one on my list that I want to shout out is The Dark Knight of the Scarecrow from 1981, often cited as the best and scariest made-for-TV movie of all time. And it's probably the first official entry into the scarecrow horror subgenre as like a scarecrow-centric horror film. And we watched this last weekend in preparation for this segment. And I got to say, I still think it holds up. What do you think?
It was fun, yeah. Sad.
It's a little bit sad. The actual villain in this movie is an evil postman played by Charles Durning, who may also be a pedo in the film, not in real life.
to clarify.
Yeah. The film deals with an unfortunate murder of a disabled adult named Bubba by a gang of vigilantes. During the murder, Bubba has disguised himself as a scarecrow, and after his death, the scarecrow returns as a harbinger of death for those involved in this murder. Apparently, they made a Dark Knight of the Scarecrow 2 in 2022,
which is
a real piece of shit, I've heard. So
We should watch it.
The second movie I want to highlight is the movie Scarecrows from 1988, which I don't know if you've seen yet.
I don't think I have.
It's about a bunch of bank robbers that parachute out of a plane into a field full of killer scarecrows.
Ooh.
And it's been a while, but I remember it being pretty fun. It's just kind of like classic horror movie.
That's a great idea.
Yeah. And then the third film I want to highlight is called Husk from 2011, which we watched the other night. It's got kind of a similar storyline as Scarecrows, only this time we have a car full of young adults who crash at their car and end up fighting for their lives against a field full of haunted scarecrows. And it's kind of cheesy, kind of cringe, but also better than it has any right to be. Kind of fun. It's just like a standard horror movie, you know?
It's a slasher, yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of a slasher. There's some like weird supernatural stuff, but other films in the subgenre, obviously the Jeepers Creepers franchise.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
We actually watched, the same weekend we watched 12 Monkeys, we watched the first Jeeper Creepers on VHS.
Oh, right, Sylvester.
Yeah. It's kind of a fun movie,
The first
actually.
One was fun.
I like the second one better. This
the
is
second
controversial.
One with the school
I remember
bus.
Watching yeah. that too, yeah.
Yeah, I thought that one was pretty cool also.
I liked that one a lot.
Those movies are slightly better than they have any right to be as well.
It's true. I agree.
Trick or Treat from 2007. It's kind of a anthology. There's a little scarecrow segment in that. Obviously, the Children of the Corn franchise, not scarecrow-centric, but I know there's scarecrows in those movies. Night of the Scarecrow, not to be confused with Dark Knight of the Scarecrow.
This is
from 1995. We watched this as part of our October watch list a few years ago. Kind of wasn't bad. There was a great effect where it was just like a paper moon,
oh, the moon
that somebody like slid across.
Oh, I love that.
Here goes the moon.
It was hilarious.
Yeah.
We watched Dark Harvest last year.
I was going to mention that.
Yeah. I read. Yeah, your dad liked that.
Yeah.
You read the book?
I have not read the book.
There's a lot of movies called Dark Harvest. We watched the one from 2023.
Which is based on that.
It
yeah.
has
novella.
So much potential. That's all
yeah,
I'm going to say.
A great
yeah, that's
story.
The same way I feel
it's
about
so
it.
So much potential.
The story was really good. The movie was...
They strayed from the story, and that's yeah. what was weird to me.
Yeah.
It felt a bit like... I don't know. What's the word I'm looking for? It was like big budgety, like... It almost felt like a Marvel movie or something.
I thought it was awesome.
Like they were, yeah.
I thought it was like objectively good.
The movie?
Until the end.
Oh.
I don't know.
Then I was sad.
There's also a movie called Scarecrow, which is a Japanese movie from 2001, which was kind of an interesting premise, but unfortunately, if I remember correctly, wasn't that great. But the thing I want to note, which is very fun, the short story Harold from Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you remember that one?
Harold.
And then in terms of other kids things, I want to shout out Return to Oz, which obviously
scary.
There's the Scarecrow character in it, but then we also have the character of Jack Pumpkinhead, who's kind of a scarecrow. Mm-hmm. And this movie traumatized me as a kid. If you haven't seen...
Yeah, I didn't see it until I was an adult, and thank God.
If you haven't seen Return to Oz, check it out. Then obviously there's the Batman character, the Scarecrow,
that pops up as a villain. Cillian Murphy. Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so that's my little overview of Scarecrow horror. I think it's a subgenre that I wish had more quality options, but there are a few good ones in there.
It has the idea of someone that isn't human, like standing still.
Yeah.
And then suddenly they move.
Yeah.
That's pretty fucking scary. It's uncanny.
Maybe I'll try to put together like a Scarecrow.
There was a guy in my neighborhood.
October.
Wait. Yes, but I was going to say there was a...
Hook me up with the Woodland Theater. Let's do a three-banger Scarecrow marathon.
But just like someone doing that, there was someone in my neighborhood growing up that did that when we trick-or-treated. There was one guy who would sit in a lawn chair in front of his house like a scarecrow, and he would be so still. And then like when you got close enough, he'd go... You know, jump up. And that's fucking scary as shit.
That scared the shit out of me.
You did a great job.
I want to read this little quote to end this. It's from a bloody disgusting article about Husk by the author Paul Lay. The scarecrow has long been a universal source of discomfort, seeing as their natural state stirs thoughts of death. And despite their distinguishing inertness, they appear to know everything about the world around them. This concept of scarecrows possessing omnipresence is unnerving without even adding a malevolent element. Bringing them to life, as one would do in any offering of overt scarecrow horror, is the obvious next step. However, a cold and long glance from one of these dead things is as alarming as witnessing their newfound mobility. I think that's kind of cool. They're just kind of scary, you know?
Yeah, like clowns.
Like clowns.
They're just, weirdly, like, they're universally...
Like, they're like corn clowns.
They're strange. Corn clowns. They are corn clowns. It's
mm-hmm.
true.
Mm. Corn clown. That's my new band.
It's a corn clown.
Remember, we were talking about adults of the corn.
Yeah, corn adults of the corn.
Corn adults.
All right, that's all I had for my special time.
Yay!
Buggy's up next. Do you have a movie?
I don't, but kind of on, like, theme with my special time... I'm now going to try to find like a Southern Gothic movie ratings.
That's
because
fun.
That is a subgenre that I really like. That's like my favorite niche one for many reasons, but it intersects with a lot of interesting like social commentary issues. And also there's a lot of like scary good material there.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of ghosts in the South.
And like interesting stuff. So that's going to be my goal.
Uh-huh, swamps.
Yeah. I'm going to try to find like a solid... low rate or like vote movie that is in the Southern Gothic subgenre.
That's fun. I love trying to pick something in like a specific subgenre.
Yeah, that's kind of
like
my
goal. That's a fun way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, we clocked that son of a bitch and now we're going to clock out.
Clock it.
Peace.
Peace out, everybody. I'm going to go pee and it's going to burn.
Oh. War. Pee war.
Dirt dogs on a gym hunt.